Presenting a proven way to build your endowment with a sustainable gift planning program, this is the Gift Planning Development Podcast, an ongoing forum designed to help you meet all of your gift planning goals.
It's the Gift Planning Development Podcast. I'm your host today, Joe Tumalo, and we're recording this podcast in some pretty crazy times in the spring of 2020. I am pleased to have our guest this morning, a guy that has been in a lot of different components of fundraising, a lot in the gift planning space, and really has a solid knowledge of complex gifts, of how to structure gifts, how to run a program. He is currently has his own company, has recently joined this side of the fence and ventured out on his own with his company called DG. That's Daniel Greenspan, DG Capital Insights. And he works with foundations, nonprofits, for-profits. And he's also connected with our buddy Brian Klontz of Charitable Solution. Brian was a recent guest on the podcast. And I'm excited to have Dan here this morning. Dan, welcome.
Thanks so much, Joe, for having me. Really appreciate it.
Of course. And of course, we are doing this online. We're keeping our a social distance, about 60 miles probably, right?
Not that far. I'm over in Lafayette Hill. So we're Lafayette only Hill, probably right. About 10 miles away from each other. And you're over in Ambler?
I am indeed. And we met each other from the greater Philadelphia Plan Giving Council.
Yes.
The course, which I think they had to cancel this year because of the pandemic.
We've delayed it this year. I'm a board member for the Plan Giving Council. Was just added there at the end of 2019. So happy to join that board and group of great, unbelievable professionals in the gift planning space. And we are planning to still host that Plan Giving course later in the year. And actually hope you'll still teach one of the breakout sessions.
I love doing it. People are always eager to learn, and we have a good time. It's fun. So we picked some topics to focus on today, and one of the most fascinating has to be gift acceptance policies, right? I mean, everybody just can't get enough and get so worked up over the gift acceptance policies. I say that with some sarcasm, but it is I always say to clients, it's the boring but important stuff. And I'm shocked by how many people that I start to work with who say, oh, we have gift acceptance policies. Yeah, they're all up to date. And then 3 months later, when they finally find them, they say, oh, you know what? These are about 3 years old. It's a boring thing, but you have to get through it. And there's a lot of reasons why. Do you want to share why it's so important to have those things up to date and people to be really conscious of where they are and not just sitting in a drawer somewhere or in Dropbox, but really a part of the team, right? A part of the institution, a part of the fundraising that everybody understands what they are.
Without a doubt, Joe. The gift acceptance policies are so important to fundraising. It sets the course for your fundraising team to think about, you know, what's possible under your organization's roof and where you can be creative. You know, part of my role and work with Charitable Solutions is helping nonprofits say yes to complex and illiquid gifts. And it's important to, you know, not only have a gift acceptance policy, but to analyze it frequently, to revisit it, to make edits and changes, and also understand there is risk in accepting certain types of assets. There's complexity in accepting certain types of assets. And in reality, you may not want to accept those assets directly, but what most nonprofits don't realize, there's some great resources in the space, like our friend Brian Klontz at Charitable Solutions, who can really support all nonprofits in saying yes and to most of these gifts that have a lot of complexity or liquid and have an unknown kind of liquidation in the future. So really a lot there to unpack. Gift acceptance policies can be very straightforward, but also can add a lot of flexibility by using an outside resource to support you in the acceptance of those unique gifts.
Yeah, it becomes a no-brainer sometimes, right? It was interesting. Brian had thrown out a stat of the percentage of gifts that actually close. Right. So they may get, for every 10 opportunities that they work with, they may actually wind up closing one or two, I think. But I don't know. That's right.
And in reality, almost 80% of all non-cash gifts are still rejected. I mean, there's tax and legal complexity. There's maybe environmental issues. There could be management issues. You know, certainly there's the charity's internal processing in terms of how they handle it. And just general perceived risk, headline risk. You know, what's the reward for kind of taking on this added risk? And also, what's the risk of taking on the added risk? So a lot of the times these are conversations for further understanding, but, you know, 80% of those may not come to fruition because of a number of items. With that being said, I think it's important to take a very donor-centered approach to your donors' thinking around strategic philanthropy and realizing in many cases when we think about impact, the first opportunity a donor has in making an outsized impact is actually how they fund their philanthropy. You know, that is something that I think a lot of fundraisers don't need to really understand and figure out how they can better support their donors to give more away by thinking about, you know, different types of assets. In essence, cash is bad. And everything else is good, in short of it. And so really, we're looking for those appreciated assets. And, you know, a stat I had was, you know, there's more than half of the Influit investors' assets are held in non-cash assets. So cash only represents about 6 to 8, maybe as much as 10% of the assets an affluent investor has in their portfolio. Very, very small portion of the overall portfolio. And actually, if you look at the aggregate stock market value, which is roughly, and these numbers are a little bit dated here, it's almost 5-6 years old here, approximately $28 trillion in assets. The non-cash market estimate is $50 to $65 trillion in assets. So even when you look at appreciated securities, it's still half of the total non-cash market out there. So there's a lot in privately held businesses, privately held stock, real estate, artwork, agricultural commodities, a lot of different types of assets out there you could consider. And that is where a bulk of the wealth is, and a bulk of the assets are stored for many affluent investors.
Great stats. My observation is that there's a lot of great research and stats that come out from a lot of the plant people in our space. But at the end of the day, I wonder how much is actually, like, is it really motivating? As plan giving people, we get it, right? We're comfortable with it. I'm not a tax guy, but I'm not afraid to have a conversation about anything with any donor, knowing my limitations. But and I know that, and I keep pushing on my clients, you don't have to be an expert. But when it comes to major gift officers, they look at the stats and say, that's interesting. And then they go back to their day-to-day stuff. Oh, that's really fascinating, Dan. Thank you for that information. Boy, how many trillion? Wow, that's a lot of trillion. That's a lot of zeros. And then let me go back to pursuing cash gifts. So I'm not faulting them. They need training. They need coaching. They need guidance. They need to be incentivized. We talked about this before the call. Really am convinced that the shops where major gift officers have plan giving as part of their metrics are obviously going to generate more non-cash gift opportunities, right? Because they're incentivized, they're measured on it. So long question or comment, but it's like, I see all this great research and stats. It's like, okay, fascinating. I get it, but how's that going to move the needle with the rest of the shop when everybody's under so much pressure to bring cash in the door?
No doubt. And you raised some really good points. It's not to take away from your everyday fundraising and your kind of normal way of interfacing and building relationships with donors. I think it really, as you build those measurements for gift planning officers or major gift officers, to consider some benchmarks around pulling in the expert. To your point, they don't need to be an expert in all of these conversations. They need enough to be dangerous and to raise up and understand when there's some trigger words in those conversations that could lead to some opportunities to pull in an expert to help them dive deeper on that conversation and really uncover what's the right time, but also then what's the right asset to fund their philanthropy and make an outsized gift to your institution. And I can tell you, and I've seen this happen, when these things go well and are done right, not only does the nonprofit win, because they receive more of the philanthropy pie of that donor's kind of philanthropy bucket or assets from that single donor, but also do they become and build a greater relationship with that donor for longer term gifts, planned gifts, as an example. And so this is really just the tipping point to help them not only support your organization, but to potentially increase the capital available for their philanthropy overall. And that's just going to create a lot deeper and meaningful relationship. And bringing in the expert to help you have those conversations is, as you said earlier, a no-brainer. And that's where, you know, part of my firm with DG Capital Insights and the partnership that I have with Charitable Solutions and Brian Klons can really add a lot of value to nonprofits, to donor advised funds, to any fundraising out there that is exploring kind of these types of assets and really re-looking at and reanalyzing their gift acceptance policies to determine how they can include these conversations in their fundraising. Again, don't have to accept the asset directly yourself, but just to include them in your conversations with donors and know when to pull in the experts. And certainly can help there in thinking about trigger words and how to start those conversations and how to ask open-ended questions that will lead you to a path of, well, these donors have a door collection and maybe the piece of painting on the wall is not something that the next generation wants to own and take ownership of. And hence it might be a great asset to consider to give to philanthropy. Certainly there's, you know, other issues involved in that, like the related use clause and ensuring you're getting a fair market value deduction for that gift. Are you going to give it all or a percentage or portion of the asset or artwork? So there's a lot of considerations there from a tax planning perspective, but certainly should be considered as you evolve the donor conversation and figure out what are the right assets and what are the right timing for them to make a major gift of something that's maybe more complex or liquid.
Let's do a quick role play. I don't think we've ever done this on the podcast. Okay, so I'm a, I'll take the easy way out. I'll be the donor. And you're a major gift guy. So you're not a planned giving expert, right?
Right.
And I'm in my 70s. I've been giving forever to the organization. And you contacted me. Let's say I'm widowed, no kids. And you contacted me to thank me for my years of giving. And I agreed to a visit. Mm-hmm. And so we're sitting down and having a conversation. Take it away, Dan. No pressure. We did not talk about this. So I'm putting you on the spot. And it could be, you know, high level, but I'll give you, I'll certainly make it easy for you, or easy as I can. But to, like, if you just ask me some high level questions, I'll throw in some cues to, and I want to show people that it can be really simple. It does not have to be land or real estate. It can be something really simple that they're not even thinking about that. Oh, okay. Gee. Yeah, why would I not be listening for that? So, okay, take it away. Hi, Dan. Sure.
Hi, Joe. How are you doing? Thanks so much for your ongoing support.
My pleasure. It's good to finally have human contact.
Yeah, it's an interesting time and a lot of unknown and unprecedented here as we move forward. And I really was reaching out today to check in. Thank you for your amazing ongoing annual gift that you support us with. We were able to pick up the check and we did receive it. And I wanted to let you know that during this kind of crazy time, we are still able to get in and pick up, you know, our check. So thank you for sending that along.
Yeah, I wish I could do more, Dan. What a setup. Oh my God, what a setup. Hey, Dan, I wish I could do more, but I just don't have enough cash to give you more. I told you I'd make it easy for you.
Well, Joe, I wanted to ask you, there's been a lot of tax changes this year, and there's a lot of opportunity to think about different assets to fund your philanthropy. Have you explored funding your philanthropy and making your gift to our organization in a slightly different way outside of, you know, your checkbook?
I have to say I have not. You know, I just turned 72 in January, so I am starting to take, well, I know that with the new CARES Act, I was going to take my RMD, but holding off on that for now. And no, I haven't really thought about, you know, I lost my wife a couple of years ago and we don't have kids, never had kids. So I guess I would have to do an inventory of what I have. What are there some really simple ones, Dan?
Well, Joe, there certainly are. And, you know, this year is unique because there aren't RMDs. And as you noted, there's always a great way to give through your RMD, and it's called a qualified charitable distribution allowance. We can talk more about that maybe as you think in future years about, you know, how you're going to use those RMDs and if you need them for your lifestyle. But really, cash is not good. At the end of the day, I'd love to sit down with some of your trusted advisors, your financial advisor, maybe you personally, and kind of talk through the portfolio. We're seeing actually a spike and increase of actually just shares, publicly traded stock that donors are giving. And there's a number of tax benefits by gifting those appreciated assets.
Yeah, I saw something. You guys sent out a postcard last year when the market was good about appreciated stock. It was in November, I think. Didn't you send a card in November?
Yes.
Yes,
at the end of every year, we you know, during the November and December, what we call giving season, we see certainly a spike of those types of contributions. And it really actually can help you potentially give more to our organization because some of the savings you have across your portfolio and the deductions you'll receive by making gifts of appreciated securities.
Now, how about now that they're depreciated, with the stock market being what it is, would it make sense to donate depreciated stock, or would you think I'd want to sell that off first?
Generally, you don't want to give a depreciated asset. You want to find the most appreciated asset in your portfolio, Joe. And one thing, if you're telling me a lot of the portfolio has depreciated below your cost basis or what you paid for that stock, then potentially we could look at some other options and potentially look at some other assets that you have in your portfolio. I know we've talked previously about the art collection that you and your wife had collected at times, and that's very personal to you and your wife, and she loved art. And wow, would that be a great way to potentially memorialize her by exploring, you know, some gifts of artwork? Is that of some interest? Have you thought about potentially some of the art collection you have?
I have not. It's a great idea, but you guys are an animal rescue organization. What would you do with the artwork?
Well, depending on the situation, we'd have to explore that. There are some related use clauses that could impact your deduction. We do have a small art display at our office that we use for guests. Generally, as you know, it's more animal focused. So depending on the piece, we may or may not be able to.
Yeah, we do. You know, you saw my dogs playing poker piece, right?
A special piece.
That'd be perfect.
That would be perfect for the office.
I'm a classic.
You know, another option is certainly looking at, you know, liquidating it. But, you know, again, that was just one idea. I know also you and your wife had a couple vacation properties that you should, you know, really explore potentially, as well as you're downsizing and consolidating your life. That may be a great option to consider here in the future.
Well, we do have, I still have the house in Ocean City, New Jersey, and have been thinking about whether or not my nieces and nephews and their grandkids would have any use for it. So if I were to say, yeah, and I know you're not a tax guy, and I'm not looking for tax answers, but just generally, how would that work? So let's say I want to get rid of the Shore House, especially because I am looking at least in the next 5 or 6 years to go into a independent living community, right?
Sure.
Well, how would that work with the house? So I sell the house and give you the proceeds? No, that doesn't sound
right. Well, actually, right, because then at the end of the day, you're still giving us cash. The idea is actually you're giving the appreciated asset in kind. So you're actually transferring the deed or the ownership of that property to our charity, our organization. and we then take ownership of that property. We work with you to, you know, to liquidate that property, and then we take the proceeds and towards our mission. There are some other options. You know, generally, once we get into the details, I'm not a tax advisor or legal advisor. I do bring in some experts that can help kind of uncover some of the opportunities here and truly what's the right asset for what you're trying to accomplish and how you're trying to support the organization. And there's a lot of options. There's kind of a retained life estate option that you could look at where you can still use the property during your lifetime. You actually get a current tax deduction or benefit for that gift. And then you get to live and enjoy that property during your lifetime. And it actually turns over to the to our organization at the time of your passing. And also, we could look at this as more through a planned gift lens and bring in our planned giving team to kind of have some discussions around what you're thinking about doing for your legacy, and also kind of encouraging some thought around what should be listed in your estate plan as potentially the best asset to give there.
Wonderful. Dan, thank you so much. I have to tell you that you're one of the few fundraisers that takes the time to help me figure out creative ways to support the charities I care about. I really appreciate you bringing it up. And it felt like you were not just trying to get my money, but you were actually concerned about my goals as well, what I'm trying to accomplish, not just what you guys are trying to accomplish.
Without a doubt, Joe.
Yeah.
We're here to support you and your overall giving and thinking about your passions and your why. And we are blessed that we are part of your legacy and your work to give back.
And scene. Well done, man.
That was on the fly, but I think we did it.
Yeah, you did. We did not even talk about that. Were your kids in the background there?
Did you hear them a little bit?
A little bit. It was funny.
I apologize. I had the
no.
baby like monitor on, and I forgot to turn it off before the call.
No problem. Do you have a baby? Obviously, no.
John. Well, he's two now, so two. He's more of a toddler. Oh. But you know, and a 7-year-old. So I'm in the throes of it during this time, and have my teacher hat on, my parent hat on, and my full-time entrepreneur hat on.
Hey, it's a sign of the times, right? What we're all dealing with.
I'm very blessed, and you know, it's been great to spend more time with the family, and it's an interesting. We'll see how long we kind of last in this environment. Be interesting to see.
And more so, what happens when everybody goes back? What's fundraising going to be? Who knows, right? We know about special events, right? People are rethinking special events.
I'm still positive on fundraising and philanthropy this year. I think there's certainly some unique carve-outs that hopefully will encourage donors to give more. For the first time ever, we have an above-line tax deduction. Which, you know, will allow everyday givers to at least get a tax benefit for their charitable gifts up to $300 per individual. And then also you can make, you know, as we sat here and said, cash gifts are not good. You can actually stack your donations this year. So for donors who want to give an appreciated asset, they can actually still use securities, stock, mutual funds, bonds, or, you know, privately held stock, real estate, to a public charity, still receive a 30% of their adjusted gross income deduction for that gift, and then actually top off that 30% with an outsized cash gift and deduct all of their income this year. They can deduct up to 100% of their adjusted gross income this year. And so I'm still favorable and hoping that we're coming together. This is different recession. This is a pandemic, and it's not a natural disaster. It's not just a recession. It's a global pandemic that we have never experienced before. So with that being said, I think when you've seen all types of funders rally around kind of more of a natural disaster, actually giving has kind of spiked and gone up to address the need in the community, but also how do we solve this problem now, but also going forward and putting some important pieces in place to make sure something like this doesn't happen again.
Wow. Well, let's end on a high note here and positive energy. I love it. Thank you. There's not a lot of that these days.
Without a doubt. And, you know, I still think that there's little pockets of appreciation. You know, there you've seen Zoom stock soar and, you know, the market's off its lows. So if you did buy at the first bottom of that dip, you know, you might already have 10 or 20% appreciation in some short term securities. You know, I still think there's some opportunity out there to uncover and to work with donors to figure out what is that right asset and to not just ask for that check or that credit card donation, to really take a step backwards and ask your donor, you know, how they would like to fund their philanthropy and are they curious about other alternatives than just checkbook philanthropy.
Nice. I always say I should have bought stock in Zoom and Charmin, the people that make the toilet paper, right?
Yep.
Or Scott Paper, whoever that is.
It's amazing.
Yeah. Dan, this has been great. Thank you so much. So
I've enjoyed this, Joe.
Yeah. Plug something. What are you looking for? How can people get in touch with you? Why
sure.
should people get in touch with you? Yeah.
Thanks so much. So, you can reach me at, dgci.insights@outlook.com. Again, at dgci.insights@outlook.com. That's my consulting, business email. And really, I work with financial advisors, attorneys, nonprofits, donor advised fund sponsors, community foundations, and everyone in between, corporations that are looking to make gifts of illiquid and complex assets. Of course, Brian Klein and Charitable Solutions offer a lot of different planning solutions like the National Gift Annuity Foundation. And so if you have some donors, Joe, as we were talking in our case study, that are 70 and plus and looking for an income stream, you know, charitable gift annuities might be an option. I'm really here to be a sounding board to help you strategize around your gift acceptance policies and further, you know, your approach into this illiquid and complex asset world. And I can tell you a lot of these gifts are large and substantial. You know, they're in excess of seven figures. They're not your everyday $10 donation, $20 check or credit card donation. So when working with these donors around complex and illiquid assets, it's generally your larger ultra high net worth type donors that are doing some more advanced charitable planning. And know that you have experts here to support you in those conversations. You do not need to do this on your own. And we have a ton of resources, content, material, and ourselves to kind of bring to the table to help you screen, so to speak. As we noted up front, a lot of these donations may or may not be right or the right time. And so we can help you kind of screen those conversations and figure out what is the right asset and what is the right time.
Great. Dan, thanks again.
My pleasure, Joe.
You be safe.
You too. Take care.
Thank you for listening to the Gift Planning Development Podcast. For more information on any of the topics you've heard about today, please go to giftplanningdevelopment.com.